The big teaching in the Course is about the separation, and the funny thing about the separation, you have to read about 200,000 words into the Course before it explains it. Before that, it just merely tells you you're in a dream and you need to wake up, and this is how to wake up. Okay, and it kind of, it appears to be saying that over and over, but every time it says it over and over, it gives some additional philosophy that is quite often quite interesting. Like I say, a lot of the people just see that one idea over and over, and then they quit after about 30 pages and never pick it up again. It's about 200,000 or so words into it that it really gives the core message of the whole thing, which is the original separation from God. It says, into eternity, and it's chapter 27, there's like 31 chapters in the text, and then you go into the workbook, and this is chapter 27, before it tells you the most important part of the whole book. Into eternity, where all is one, there crept a tiny, mad idea, at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh. In his forgetting to laugh, did the thought become a serious idea and possible of both accomplishment and real effects. And the mad idea was to create this universe where there would be limitations, where we wouldn't have full communication with God, but we would be kind of on our own to just be what we wanted to be and overcome limitations, and we would also be able to play games. The Course says in heaven there's nobody plays any games, because you know, how can you play a game when everybody wins? You know, if you want to go play golf, you can make it hit the hole in one every single time. You have, if you're trying to play football, you can just run, make the goal every time, because you can do whatever you want to do in the higher spheres. So there's no game plan. I personally think one of the big draws of us creating this universe is we wanted to play games. And look how much we enjoy games. Curtis and I were just looking at the highlights of the BSU game on the computer today. This morning, games are really fascinating, and it composes probably about a third of what people watch on television or the internet. Some type of game. We have all kinds of game shows, but games all involve limitation, and I believe that was a big draw of us coming down here, was to be able to play games.
John thinks he's going to beat me at pool. Well, he's got another thought coming.
Yeah, the pool tables. Oh, yeah. The pool tables, even in the spirit world, you can make the shot every single time.
You can hit them all in one shot.
Yeah. Like the spirit world for me, I'm just bored, you know.
I'll fix you. I'll give you a ride around the block.
Is there another universe where the concept is different? Like, our concept here is games. Is there another one where they it's being done differently?
Well, Michael Newton says they do actually have games in the world of the souls, and they have games where they do things as a group to produce certain effects, he says, which are kind of fun, but they don't have any games involving limitation there. But he says they do have different activities which are kind of like games. Now, keep in mind, the world of the soul is a step down from where we originated, where the monad is. So the monad projects the soul down to the place that we go after death. Okay, and that's, we have a lot more freedom there than we do here. But then the ultimate freedom is back at our source.
Okay. Do you think this will refine the prodigal son in such a way that it'll surprise the father?
That it'll what?
Do you think this will refine the souls more than they initially, I'm trying to word this so I can like make sense. From their original state, they came down, right? So
yeah.
When they go back, will they be just as is, or will they be more refined, more evolved to their greatest?
Well, purpose? That's a really good question. The Tibetan talks about, says that after everything is said and done, we achieve total liberation, we will have the fruit of our experience will follow us. Then, but the Course in Miracles acts like, that's one disagreement I have with it, is it acts like this whole experience here is of no value. That when we go back, it'll be like this existence never even happened. We'll just continue as we were. But then it's kind of sidesteps and tells us that any experience we had here that involved love or kindness or goodness, it says we will take with us. So it's a little bit contradictory. In some ways it acts like this dream is completely useless, but then it tells us that the involvement and relationships and the experience we have that involves love, we will take with us to the eternities. Well, it's a little bit like Paul says, love never fails and never dies. And he says, though I will be burned, give myself to be burned, give my body to be burned and sacrifice everything, and though there be prophecies, there will fail, but the one thing that will not fail will be love. Love is the one thing that is eternal, that Paul says.
JJ?
Yeah.
What about other worlds? We know that there are other worlds, other places that you can incarnate. Do you have an experience?
Yeah.
Do those other worlds also have games like
well,
we do on Earth?
I would imagine they're limited just like we are. But the other worlds have to go through evolution just like we did in this world. They'll most likely have their games. Because wherever there's limitation, there's power to have games. The great part about games is if you really win, it produces a feeling you can't get in any other way. You probably couldn't even get that in heaven. Now, you used to play football, didn't you, Adam? Okay? When you made the big catch or whatever, produced quite a good feeling, didn't it?
Yeah.
Can you think of a time when you really made a really good play?
No.
Yeah. What kind of feeling did that generate?
Pain in my left knee.
You got tackled and hurt.
Pain in his left knee. Cheering, and I got up and walked off for the season.
Yeah,
I had some great plays, and it was.
Yeah.
It's fun to be part of a team,
and I think that was part of the draw because when we play our games here and we actually win, it produces. Tremendous feeling. I remember when BSU won the Fiesta Bowl game against Oklahoma. Did anybody watch that?
Oh, yeah.
Boy, that was quite the game. Our quarterback, we were ahead, and our quarterback threw an interception with, I think, 2 minutes left. And it looked like we were doomed because that put Oklahoma made a touchdown and I think we had like 2 minutes left, and it looked like we were doomed. And what really made it bad was that in the last season, in our crucial game, he did the same thing. He threw an interception at the last minute, and we lost our big game. And here he did the same thing again, and I thought, oh, man, our quarterback is going to be doomed. He's going to be hated by all the fans.
The worst thing about that game... because everybody thought it was doomed and they left.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people left because they thought it was over. But anyway, I felt really bad for our quarterback because I thought he was really going to be like the enemy of the people after this. But then they pulled it off and they made a touchdown within the 2 minutes and then they went for the extra point and they pulled it off and won by 1 point. And I'll tell you, everybody in Boise, I think the whole city of Boise was visible from the space station because of the, the brightness of everybody's spirit. Everybody was so happy in Boise that we won that game. And it produces a feeling that perhaps they don't even have this feeling in heaven. You know, maybe that's part of what drew us down here, to get that feeling of
winning.
Accomplishment.
Yeah, I've heard that in the heaven worlds, everything is far greater than what we experience here. As far as beauty and joy.
Yeah, what's really greater there, and a lot of people that have had near-death experiences relate this. Now, remember, the near-death experiences doesn't take you to the top. It takes you to the soul world, which is a lot better than here. But when they say they feel the love of God, they say it's a love that's like 100 times stronger than any love they've ever experienced here. It's really, really powerful. And a lot of them don't want to return to their bodies because this love they experience is so terrific. You know, no matter how good something is, if you're there for eternity, pretty soon it starts to feel normal. And I think that probably was with us. And we decided we wanted to feel other things. And so we had to enter this dream. And the Course called this a mad idea. And everybody thinks the Course was written by Jesus because nowhere does it say, "I am Jesus," but he says things that indicates that it is Jesus talking. But I'm a little suspicious of that because it talks about this world as if it's completely useless in so many ways. And it sounds like it was written by the son that stayed home in the prodigal, in the story of the prodigal son. The son was really disgusted with the son that went out into the world.
So how did he manage to get here to bring this message?
By communication from one sphere to another. You know,
through the Holy Spirit.
What?
Through the Holy Spirit.
It could have been through the Holy Spirit, or it could have been just some type of direct communication that is possible from one sphere to another. Now, it wasn't from the Father, according to the Course in Miracles, because he doesn't want to put any attention on this world because it will make it more real, okay, and harder to escape from. But I think it's entirely, and there are entities that have channeled various channels that say that they have never incarnated.
So and how can they communicate? Do they have to go to sleep in order to communicate?
They would have to put their consciousness, project their consciousness downward to be able to do it. But there are quite a number of entities that have channeled, that identify themselves as entities that have never incarnated. And the way that the author writes this book, it almost sounds like he's part of the sonship that never incarnated and is just totally disgusted with this world. But let's say it is from that source. If it is, it's still from a source with high intelligence, and almost all of it could still be true.
Have members of the hierarchy all incarnated?
They've all incarnated and mastered this world.
So what they're trying to teach is not in theory. I mean, they've experienced incarnation on this earth.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've been through it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
because I wondered if what we're trying to accomplish is, and the hierarchy is going to help us or whatever, it's like, yeah, but they've never incarnated, so they don't know what it's like, and they're going to leave it to us. But you're saying they have, except it was in a different time.
Yeah.
Obviously, but they haven't incarnated. Now, are there some of them living on the earth right now?
Yeah, probably so. There's, when the Tibetan talks about the members of the hierarchy, like, he pointed out that one time that one incarnated into Russia and at tremendous sacrifice when Russia was a controlled by a dictatorship. So he pointed out that this member of the hierarchy made a big sacrifice by incarnating there to try to enlighten those people. And so they incarnate. Then he talks about another master he calls the European master. And then he talked about Jesus, the master Jesus, being in incarnation in 1920 in Syria. He's probably not there anymore. I mean, we don't know who that was for sure.